You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Hello and welcome into the 19th iteration of the Coast to Coast Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Craycraft, and I'm joined as always by Dante Guarneri. How has your beginning of trade season, as we just got our first trade of February, or second trade of February, underway?
Yeah, it's been great. It's unfortunate that Mason Plumlee still can't find a home to consistently call his own, but at the end of the day, that's how this business works, I guess.
Yes, and you spoke of Mason Plumlee, who was probably the key piece in this trade between the Denver Nuggets and the Portland Trail Blazers, two teams battling for the eighth seed, which is pretty rare to see. You see Yusuf Nurkic and Memphis's first-round pick go to Portland, and in return, Denver receives Mason Plumlee and a 2018 second-round pick. My initial reaction to this is I don't really like it for either team, really. For Portland, you lose your starting quality center. Yusuf Nurkic has shown flashes, but this year he honestly hasn't even been all that good. And they do get the first round pick, but at pick number 20 for Denver, you're not losing very much, as you already are kind of pinching for minutes as it is, so you don't really need another mediocre role player. And for Denver, getting Mason Plumlee, he'll be good. He's able to play next to Jokic, which Nurkic was not able to do. And you'll have two really, really good passing big men. But the cap situation after this season, as he is a restricted free agent, gets very interesting. And you could see Denver roll into a spot that Portland's in right now, where they're just stuck with a mediocre team and no cap space to use.
Yeah, no, I think it's fair to say that this was a bit confusing. But I think at least on Portland's side, it made a little bit more sense, at least now that they have three first-round picks. Probably all of them are going to fall into that bottom third of draft picks after the season. They'll have their own, plus Cleveland's, which will probably be last couple of picks, and Memphis's pick. But you could exchange those to move up in the draft. That happens typically throughout any sports draft. And with the way Portland's cap situation is working, they have so much locked up to McCollum, to Crabbe, to Lillard. It didn't really make much sense to keep a guy that probably wasn't going to stay there after the season anyway.
Right, and those first-round picks are interesting. Portland, whether they make the playoffs, they'll probably be somewhere between like 13 and 17, and then you have Memphis, who will probably be around 21, 22-ish, and then Cleveland, as you said, who will be in the last couple of picks. So they are locked and loaded for what many are saying is a very deep draft class, and I think thinking about it now, just on the air, I think that starting to break some of them down in future episodes is certainly something that we should begin thinking about. But that's not what this episode's for. This episode is for what you and I love probably more than anything else. Free agency is a close second, but it's February. That means it's trade season. We break out what may as well just be our homepage at this point, the ESPN Trade Machine. And we each came up with three trades of our own. One of them is a must-do, which we think both teams in these trade scenarios have to make these deals. We have a hopeful one that we're hoping happens, and then we have one that's a little bit of a reach, but that's what this is all fun for, and we probably will never see these trades ever come to fruition. I will lay the floor to you, and you can give me your first trade, whichever category it is in.
Great. I think starting with the must-do makes me feel a little bit better about myself going forward when I'm making these trades. So the first one has to do with a team that has struggled a bit recently, has kind of lost its footing in the East, and it's the Toronto Raptors, who have recently dropped down to fourth in the Eastern Conference. The big thing that we took away from last week with Lior was that they needed to improve their front court. And one of the trades that we actually talked about, and this is the one that I do think is a must-do, is getting Serge Ibaka to the Raptors. And that can come from a few simple deals with Orlando, just tossing some guys over that aren't necessarily part of their future or haven't really made that much of an impact so far this year. So the trade I propose is Serge Ibaka for Pat Patterson, Siakam, and Dellen Wright, the point guard, who hasn't really played much for the Raptors, all going to Orlando. The biggest contract being Pat Patterson on a one-year, $6 million expiring deal. And the rest are very small deals. So I think this trade works because it improves the front line without giving up too much of future assets. Obviously, losing Siakam isn't ideal for the Raptors, but they need to improve that front court, and this is their time to strike because they are within striking distance of Cleveland, of Boston, of Washington. So that's my first must-do.
Yeah, so just so everyone knows, we did not discuss these deals beforehand, so these come as much of a shock to you as it does to me. That deal, I think it's interesting. I don't know if Orlando is willing to give up Serge if they don't get a first round pick, but I know Pascal and DeLon Wright are close to a first round pick value, and they get a player in Patrick Patterson who isn't a whole heck of a lot worse than Serge, and they're both on expiring deals. Overall, I think I like this trade for both sides because Orlando is still bad, and this trade just makes them slightly worse. And then for Toronto, Serge, as we've seen with the Thunder year in and year out, he has some nights where he's the biggest difference maker on the court, and that's what Toronto is hoping for as they try and figure out where they're going. And as you talked about with that podcast last week with Lior, when we were talking about the Raptors, we talked about all their concerns, and over this last like 10 days or so, all of those concerns have kind of popped up, and we're seeing them struggle for sure. So my first deal is also my must-do, and this involves the Los Angeles Clippers and the Denver Nuggets. For a long time, we've kind of heard these two teams talked about. Last year, we heard a little Blake Griffin buzz, but I can't go there. This involves a slightly smaller player by the name of Danilo Gallinari. He's been rumored to LA and Toronto quite a bit as maybe a stretch three combo 3-4 player who can add some scoring off their bench or just add a little extra pop to the starting lineup. So in return for Danilo, the Denver Nuggets will receive Austin Rivers, Bryce Johnson, and a heavily protected first round pick whenever that becomes available. It probably sounds like a little bit too much that the Clippers are giving up just because they're kind of strapped for assets, but they get this fifth player who can finally culminate that unbelievable four-man lineup that they have with Paul, Redick, and Griffin and Jordan. And I think Danilo fits in really well there. And then when Griffin goes out, he can play some small ball four, and you get the Chris Paul, DeAndre with three shooters around lineup that everyone's been fawning over.
Yeah, what people don't normally talk about is that Gallinari is just such a large person. I think he's like 6'10". He could really step into that four with no problem. I guess my question for you is why you didn't have Wilson Chandler in there instead of Gallinari. It has been rumored lately that he's asked for a trade. He's kind of wanted out, seeing that the situation doesn't work. And what about the concern of moving Austin Rivers off the team? I mean, as much as I dislike Austin Rivers, I don't know how much his dad dislikes him.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point, and the father-son relationship can't kind of be understated. In regards to Gallinari and Chandler, I think ultimately one of them for sure gets moved, and that is probably Chandler, but I just decided on Gallinari for this one because I think he's more dynamic offensively. He's not quite as good of a defender as Chandler, and I think Chandler is probably an easier piece to move all around. I don't know. We're still hoping to figure out whether the Nuggets are going to kind of take a step back or try and take that step forward, and this Plumlee trade kind of seems like they're trying to take a step forward, meaning that maybe they don't deal some veterans, but we still don't know. And you do bring up some valid concerns, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I do like the idea of Gallinari stepping in there on a winning team. I don't think he's ever had a winning team, really, in his NBA stint either.
Well, I mean, the beginning years with George Karl were winning, but...
Yeah. Light. All right, so I guess that kind of helps us move on to maybe a little bit more of a reach trade. And that takes me to Oklahoma City, who we got to watch face the Warriors last night. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But something that I picked up from that game is just the immense lack of shooting that this team has. My proposed trade is for them to get Jrue Holiday and Omer Asik for Enes Kanter, the injured Enes Kanter. He's going to go to the Pelicans as, I guess, the offensive center they've been looking for. Obviously, it's been rumored that Jahlil Okafor and Brook Lopez were possible fits on that team. The money works out, but I think the biggest thing here is that you get Drew Holiday, who's shooting about 40% from three, and for a team that's averaging about 33% from three, I think it makes a whole lot of a difference if he's coming off the bench and being that guy that can lead the second unit offensively.
That's interesting. I think on the Pelican side, I think you probably need a pick in there too, because mm-hmm. I think, well, I guess taking on a Sheik actually is basically as big of a thing as getting a pick is, because that honestly helps their cap space so much. So maybe not. Maybe a protected first-round pick might be going the other way. But if Drew Holiday and Russell Westbrook are on the same team, that's a lot of playmaking. And he, as you said, Holiday can play off the ball, knock down open jumpers, which, as we saw last night in that big OKC Golden State game, they weren't able to do because they just don't really have anyone who could shoot. Their guy who's supposed to be their shooter, Anthony Morrow, has been one of the worst shooters in the league this year, shooting under 30% from three, even though he's supposed to be this knockdown shooter. So that's pretty interesting. New Orleans might have some hesitations due to the injury. Mm-hmm. But,
well, this is my other part to it. I think very much New Orleans isn't really looking to win this year, right? So taking on Enes Kanter, who's locked down for another 2 years after this, it allows you to set up maybe something, at least like you're heading down the right path. And maybe it's not necessarily a free agent destination just yet because the team has been in flux for so long. But having Anthony Davis and Enes Kanter as two legitimate big men on your team at least opens the door for some people to consider, some guards to consider whether or not they would want to play for this team.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that point. And I don't know their cap situation off the top of my head, so I don't know how much space they have to sign a dynamic guard, but I think having that front line would certainly, as you said, attract free agents. So yeah, my trade, it's kind of hopeful. These two guys haven't really been brought up too much in terms of potential deals, but I think this one is actually pretty interesting. This involves the Utah Jazz and the Charlotte Hornets, two of the lesser talked about teams in the league for sure. The Utah Jazz receive Jeremy Lamb and a lottery protected first round pick in return for Alec Burks. My rationale on this is for Charlotte, they need more scores. Kemba Walker and Nicholas Batum are both very capable, but after that, it's a steep drop off. And I think Burks can come off the bench as he's done in Utah and really lead that second unit like they thought Jeremy Lamb might be able to, but he hasn't been able to. And then for Utah, I think they have plenty of playmaking. George Hill is really, really good. Gordon Hayward is an all-star this year, and Rodney Hood is obviously still improving, and he's an amazing playmaker at the two as well. So I think a guy like Jeremy Lamb can develop into a three and maybe a little bit of D guy for that team, and maybe make an impact shot in the playoffs or two. So what are your thoughts on said trade?
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about Utah as a team, because I came into the season with such high hopes for them. But at this point, you know, Gordon Hayward is definitely taking on this lead role and becoming the face of that team. And obviously having a defensive stalwart like Gobert is always helpful. But I still do think that they need some more playmakers in the backcourt. I was actually fiddling with the trade machine earlier, trying to find ways to get Lou Williams on the team, because I mean, this is still a team that only averages, I think, 100 points a game. The defense is obviously there. There's no question about that. They're giving up maybe 96 points a game or so. But I don't know. I think that someone off the bench that can provide legitimate scoring and is a definitive threat every time on the floor, that can go a long way for this team. I don't know if Jeremy Lamb necessarily improves them in any other way, but that pick is definitely enticing, I'd say.
And I guess Burks he seems to always be injured for that team,
yeah,
too.
I agree with that.
They'd be willing to move him, even though he is kind of capable as a scorer. So let's hear your biggest reach of a trade.
All right.
I'm excited for this.
This is, you know, this isn't my greatest work, to be honest. I'm I was a little bit concerned going into it, but so let me just go ahead. Philadelphia will receive the 2017 first round pick via Sacramento. That's a pick between 11th and 30th, so they'd probably get it. That comes from Chicago. They'd also receive Amir Johnson and Jaylen Brown. The Chicago Bulls will receive Jay Crowder and Jahlil Okafor. They'll also receive the Boston and Brooklyn 2018 picks.
Ooh.
And to Boston, Jimmy Butler finally can have a home. And I think that's more than enough in return for them. They're going to end up giving up two first-round picks, Jay Crowder, Jaylen Brown, and Amir Johnson in this trade.
Yeah, that's a lot to unpack. Is it possible that Boston might be giving up too much?
I definitely like consider that going in. I think the concern here is that you're basically giving up three first round picks because Jaylen Brown is so new. But he's also pretty,
and they love him too.
Yeah, which is surprising because from what I've seen lately, it hasn't been that great. But
I want him to be good more than anything in the world with those shorts he wears and stuff. But well, if we think about Boston, then they'd still have Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Jimmy Butler playing the three, I guess. At the four, that's a spot to work on still, as we've seen. And then Al Horford at the five, that's really good. And you still have the swapped this year, which probably gets you Markelle Fultz, who's gonna be unreal. Exactly. If obviously the Brooklyn pick turns in the first overall pick, excuse me. That's interesting. They lose depth for sure, but I think they need that star, and I bet Danny Ainge has enough faith in himself to develop just nice little role players off the bench. And as we kind of think about the other teams in this deal, Chicago, I think that's fine for them. I don't like where they're at right now. They have all those pieces that we didn't think were going to work together, and they're not working together. Jay Crowder is just a completely different player from what they have. He'll do all the little things that they need and knock down some threes. Who else was Chicago receiving?
Jahlil Okafor, Chicago boy himself.
Oh, Jahlil. Oh, that's true. A little and they like their hometown guys. The last hometown guy who was a top two pick ended up winning MVP and proceeded to get traded to New York. And then for Philadelphia, they're just kind of there. They get that first round pick, which I think is probably more valuable to them than Jahlil is, just based on where their team's at as a whole. I'm proud of you for this work, and I like where it's turned out.
Thank you.
So my third and final deal, third and final real deal, I have a secret fourth one.
Oh, boy.
But we'll save that for the end. Mine is also very, very surprising. I'll just do what you did and just read it off, and then I'll get into my thinking. So the Portland Trailblazers receive Julius Randle, Lou Williams, and Timothy Luwawu. The Los Angeles Lakers receive CJ McCollum and Mo Harkless.
Whoa.
And Philadelphia is there to fix some money problems, and they will take Luol Deng. But in return for that, the Lakers remove the protection from their pick so that it's an unprotected first-round pick this year. So what I'm thinking here, CJ McCollum, he's probably top three for me in terms of favorite players to watch in the entire league. I love that guy. His craftiness is so fun to watch, and I wholeheartedly believe that him and Dame can't work together if they want to be a top four seed in the East, in the West, excuse me. And then for LA, they kind of speed up their rebuild. They get CJ McCollum. They still have room to make another move or so to get another star in there and then build around that. And Mo Harkless, I think, is a solid wing player. And then for Philly, they take on the salary just because they can of Luol Deng, who's pretty bad, but he's not completely awful in return for that pick.
Yeah, I think one of the more important, maybe unsaid things about getting Luol Deng is that you get that veteran leadership that could be definitely helpful going forward, especially considering that this will be a team that'll now probably have two top 10 picks if they get the Lakers unprotected and their own. So that's definitely helpful to have. But I'm interested in this because I think that Julius Randle is a type of player that Portland actually needs right now. They've been kind of like towing this line and trying to find the right bigs to play. And I, you know, they have their Myers Leonard and now the Nurkic's of the world, but Julius Randle brings a totally different aspect to their team that I think being buckled underneath their guard heavy team is kind of hurting them. So I'm interested in this. I think McCollum both helps and hurts their rebuild, right? Hurts maybe in the sense that they aren't like jumping to top 10 in the, you know, the next 2 months if this trade happens tomorrow. But at the same time, it kind of helps them because they can probably still sink, but they are a free agent destination now, right? Because they have Randall, and excuse me, they have Russell, they have Ingram, and they have McCollum. So could be a place for big men to go. I'm into it.
Yeah, and the other thing is that Lou Williams comes to Portland for the next year just to kind of fill in as that secondary playmaker behind Dame. And then Luau is a nice little piece.
I like Luau a lot.
Yeah, I think he's going to be good. The thing that I was kind of... I don't really love McCollum on the Lakers. I want to get him out of Portland. Because I don't... You're not trading Dame, right?
No.
So I guess I'll ask you, where else, just off the top of your head, you didn't really prepare for this, where else you might see McCollum fitting around the league?
Philly. I think that's the nicest place to put him. Just as far as need goes, there aren't too many teams off the top of my head that desperately need a shooting guard.
Well, a Philly trade, you could do McCollum for the Laker pick and Nerlens Noel, maybe?
I think that's
probably not enough. But
I think they'd ask for maybe another pick, but I think people value Nerlens pretty highly around the league. And maybe unloading CJ McCollum helps the Blazers meet what they want to going forward. So I think that makes a lot of sense. Otherwise around the league, Memphis would like a shooting guard. I don't know if they have enough.
Yeah, but they don't have anything.
They don't have enough to get him. It's hard to say off the top of my head, but it's just really he fills a need for scoring, and I don't know how many people need a scorer right now around the league.
Yeah, yeah, and who can't really defend super well,
yeah.
Which is obviously the problem in Portland. And this fourth and final trade of mine, this doesn't even involve any players. This is the New York Knicks trading with the Washington Generals. They're switching owners and GMs. So James Dolan for whoever the owner of the Washington Generals is, and Phil Jackson for whoever the GM of the Washington Generals is. Because I wholeheartedly believe that the Knicks would be in a better situation if they had the Washington Generals front office running their staff.
No.
And I just say all this kind of to preface what a horrible week it's been for New York in terms of just PR and everything going on there. The Charles Oakley saga rolls on as you just said before we started recording, Spike Lee is in support of Charles Oakley. We've heard even at Rangers hockey games that they're supporting Charles Oakley. This town loves him because he's done so much for them, and just the way that he's been treated has not been very good. And then you have Carmelo Anthony and Phil Jackson butting heads as we've talked about for probably the fifth straight week on the show. How do you like that trade?
I mean, I like it only as much as getting rid of Phil Jackson. I think the only problem with trading Dolan for whoever the Washington Generals owner was is he was probably not around anymore. And the Knicks desperately need someone to get in there and get active in this organization. For far too long now, Phil Jackson has had control over this organization, and now he's starting to put a black cloud around it and around its future by his inability to, one, be able to keep expectations right with the public, because I think he was wrong in thinking that this team would have competed for anything this year. I think he has trouble dealing with stars. And the thing that we've talked about before is he's only made one good move, right? It's drafting Kristaps Porzingis, and that was great in itself, but he hasn't really done anything else since. Overpaying Joakim Noah, trading for Derrick Rose. I don't know. I mean, the problem is definitely with Dolan, because he's refusing to intervene. But at the same time, a lot of it still comes down to Phil Jackson just really maybe not being as good of a head of personnel as we thought he would be.
Right. The one thing about Phil Jackson that I will defend is that people have begun to attack how good of a coach he is based on this whole player personnel stuff, and I don't think that's warranted at all. He's still one of the greatest ever, and I do believe that. But yeah, this franchise, you didn't expect for them to get any worse, and they continue to outdo themselves, and we probably haven't even seen the end of this, and I think that'll just continue. The Knicks currently have the second worst record, I believe, I don't know what the time period is, but behind the Nets. So the two New York teams bringing up the rear, I believe it's since December or something. So I obviously that's not going to happen with Dolan getting replaced, because he kind of controls himself, and he's not self-aware enough to know what he's really doing to this franchise. But they are not in a good spot, and I don't see it turning around anytime soon, with all the pieces involved.
At the very least, they can talk about how competitively they played the Spurs today. Right now, there's just about 2 minutes to go, and they're up by three, so at least they have one thing going right.
The motto that I'll use is a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while.
There you go.
So that'll wrap up our seven fake trades, I think it is. I'm sure this isn't the last fake trade you'll see out of us before the trade deadline. We're thinking about some cool stuff for the trade deadline coming up. And the one other trade thing that I think should kind of be mentioned is, you did mention Jahlil Okafor in one of your trades. And it's been said by multiple people around the NBA, including David Aldridge, is that he has been saying his goodbyes in Philadelphia, which we don't know where he's going, or those details have yet to be leaked. There's been a number of teams rumored wanting his talents, or receiving his talents, and we've yet to see that. But I think, as we've talked about, especially in our super deep Sixers deep dive, that this makes sense, as they need to kind of start cutting down on big men, especially with Ben Simmons not too far away from returning.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's better that he's out of Philly than he's in. I think they're at a point that they're kind of over the way he acts, and just his mentality about the game. It seems like he's kind of regressed in that way. I feel like it's coming any moment now, really. I've seen reports of him, you know, like you said, saying his goodbyes and things like that. So I think this guy's good as gone soon enough.
We're just waiting for who, what, when, and where.
And Woj.
Very true. Oh, I don't think we have to break this down, but the news of him potentially joining ESPN, that was mind-boggling. Like, I was completely shocked when I saw that. I believe it was Deadspin was the first to have it. So if that happens, that'll be interesting to see what happens with that and the vertical and all of his counterparts over there at Yahoo. And then as we stop the trade talk and move to actual basketball, there happened to be one of the biggest games of the regular season last year, Kevin Durant's return to Oklahoma City. To no one's surprise, the Warriors beat the Thunder, which they've been able to do for, that's the third time this season, I believe. They defeated them 130-114. The big theme of the night was cupcakes, and as Kevin Durant has been called a cupcake after Russell Westbrook posted a photo on Instagram the day after he left of cupcakes, and there were shirts and signs all around Chesapeake Arena last night. And then you see what was a pretty funny scene after the game with Draymond Green and Steph Curry both wearing the shirts while they're talking after the Warriors win. Kevin Durant comes out, puts up 34 points, 9 rebounds, and it wasn't even that flashy of a 34. He just did what he did. And then Russell Westbrook did all he could to try and counteract that with 47 points, 11 rebounds, and 8 assists with not too much help from his counterparts.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that I took away is just looking at the stat line, at least, 6 of 24 from 3 is never, ever going to work against a team like the Warriors, and especially when they're all trying to bring their A game. Russ can only do so much, obviously, and getting his triple-double with points, rebounds, and turnovers definitely made an impact, but I don't know. I think everybody knew going into it that it would have been a tough task for the Thunder to beat the Warriors. But for the Warriors, I think, at least in my mind, so dominant throughout that game, really just putting their stamp on as the best team in the West, and certainly making the decision for Kevin Durant to join the Warriors much easier when he knows that this team, as OKC currently stands, has no chance at an NBA title.
Yeah, he certainly feels validated. It kind of shows how much shooting he really provided, because this team isn't a whole heck of a lot different from what it was previously. I guess Victor Oladipo and Sabonis are different than Serge, but I'm sure he's having zero regrets at this point in his life. He's probably three at the most difficult playoff series away from winning his first ever NBA championship, even though it might be with three other of the top 20 players in the NBA. I don't think he cares too much about it. He doesn't seem like he cares too much about the narrative of it all, as him and LeBron have both showed when they departed their teams that they drafted, that they were drafted by. And overall, I think this was a pretty fun game. I'm still waiting for a game when it's close and you just maybe see Kevin Durant switched on to Russell Westbrook with 50 seconds left in the game and they're battling, but the Warriors just have the Thunder number, and I think in the small chance that they meet in the playoffs, that would be no fun for anyone, that's for sure.
Yeah, maybe we should have made some fake trades for Thunder to get some bigger names, because I do think that they are at least one huge piece away from making any real impact on the West.
DeMarcus Cousins to the Thunder, question mark?
I like the idea of Blake Griffin still, just because of the Oklahoma ties. He can fit with Russell really well, so I don't know. DeMarcus would, I can't even imagine how Russell Westbrook and DeMarcus Cousins would feel after 40 games even.
I mean, I would be more than willing to watch it, and if I'm the one who needs to make it happen, I'll do it, everything in my power. But obviously, that's not happening, as Cousins' name has kind of been taken off the block. But overall, yeah, I don't think there's too much to break down from the game itself. Klay was good. Well, pretty much everyone was good. I think the other thing kind of worth mentioning, not in this Warriors game, but in the one before, is Draymond's triple double, in which he had a triple double without points as one of the 10-point categories. He had rebounds, assists, and steals, which is about as Draymondy as it gets. That's for sure.
I think it's still impressive that he missed the quintuple nickel still by a point. It was still the points category, keeping him back from
the 5x5,
the most, right. the craziest stat line ever.
Right. Yeah, that was certainly pretty crazy. As we begin to wrap up, I don't think there's too much to dissect in terms of, we like playing around with who's going to fit in where in terms of the NBA standings. I think the 3-4 Washington Wizards versus the Toronto Raptors race is interesting, but we've obviously talked about both those teams a lot, especially last week. The 8th seed in both conferences is pretty interesting. If you like mediocre to bad basketball, with the Pistons currently occupying it in the Eastern Conference, followed by the Hornets and the red-hot Miami Heat, led by Deion Waiters, Goran Dragic, and Hassan Whiteside. And then in the West, the Denver Nuggets currently occupying the 8th seed, with the team that they just traded, with the Portland Trailblazers only a game back. Quickly, if you had to give a prediction on who wins, who makes it out of the East as the 8 seed and West as the 8 seed, who would you pick?
Man, I think in the West, I'm like feeling more and more confident that Dallas is going to end up taking that 8th spot. I think they're 2 games out. They're riding really hot. They're starting to get in form, and Harrison Barnes, of course, is becoming a pretty elite scorer in this league. So I'm gonna give it to not Denver or Portland, the 2 teams that made the trades, but Dallas as a team that has been there before. Rick Carlisle obviously really enjoys the playoffs, and I think it's Dallas at least in the Western Conference. Eastern Conference, a little bit of a toss up. I probably say, without thinking about it anymore, that Chicago is the one to fall out, and that both Detroit and Charlotte end up sneaking in. I think Charlotte just needs some time off. They're a team that's obviously very physical, and if they get tired out for a long period of time, they do struggle as a team overall. So I think going into the All-Star break, they'll try to figure some things out, and hopefully they end up making some trades, some that can help them on the offensive side of things.
Well, and the Hornets have actually been extremely unlucky. They're the only team outside the playoff race with a positive point differential, so that's just a sign of being unlucky. So I think that's usually a signifier of things to come in terms of them being closer to 500 than below 500 by 6 games. So I would take the Hornets in there. I hope the Bulls fall out just for my own well-being, and the Bucks sneak in. Just because I want to watch Giannis try and dissect a playoff defense, but I don't know if that's going to happen, especially with Jabari Parker out for the year, which I guess we haven't mentioned, but Chris Middleton is coming back, which I think will actually help them out, because I think Middleton fits about 5 times better than Jabari, and if Jabari were healthy right now, I probably would have tried to trade him somewhere else as a reach trade, because just like McCollum in Portland, I believe that Parker doesn't fit very well next to his star in Milwaukee. And then in the West, I don't know. I mean, Denver's playing really well. They got one of the best offenses in the league. I believe it might even be the best since about Christmas. But I don't have too much faith in them. You might have to go with Portland just because Damian Lillard is better than just about any other player in this race. So usually the best player wins out, but I don't have too much to tell in the West. Yeah, and I think that'll just about wrap it up for this episode of the Coast to Coast Basketball Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Coast to Coast Pod. That is the number 2, not the word. Subscribe on iTunes to the Last Word Radio feed, and we will try and talk to you guys in the next week or so, and hopefully we'll have more trades to dissect, and we appreciate everyone for joining us.